This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the 2018 legislative agenda for the U.S. Congress. Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. Congress faces a jam-packed action list this month with deadlines looming on difficult issues such as how to fund the government and avoid a shutdown and whether to shield young undocumented immigrants, known as Dreamers, from deportation. Fresh off a party-line vote at the end of 2017 in favor of overhauling the tax code, the GOP-led Congress faces a test as to whether it has the potential to craft and pass any bipartisan agreements. At the end of 2017, Democrat Doug Johnson defied the odds by beating Republican Roy Moore, securing a Senate seat in a deeply red or Republican state. President Trump's poll numbers continue to wane, especially in light of an explosive book, Fire and Fury, recounting chaos in the White House. Complicating the legislative agenda this year are the congressional midterm elections, which usually favor the opposition party, in this case, the Democrats. We're joining us to discuss the legislative agenda as well as the midterm elections in 2018 are our veteran political analysts. John Fortier is director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and that's a think tank here in Washington. And Jim Kessler, he's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. That's a centrist policy group also based in Washington. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Great to be back.
Thanks, Carol.
Well, John Fortier, let me begin with you. Tax bill passed at the end of last year. When we were at these microphones, we discussed whether or not that was going to happen, but it did. A big legislative achievement, perhaps the only one for the GOP-led Congress. It didn't pass with any Democratic votes. Talk about the implications of that bill going forward, whether the Republicans have any momentum, notwithstanding the challenges we talked about.
Overall, it's a very good thing for Republicans to have passed the tax cut. They've not gotten through on their other big legislative priorities on getting rid of Obamacare. This was a big agenda item, which they had to coalesce around, and it was a messy process. Now, I think some critics would point to it and say that it isn't particularly popular, and Republicans are hoping it will become more popular. I'm not sure of that, although I do think that the tax cut does have benefits for many people. Whether people appreciate that and recognize them, whether they're large enough and whether they're direct enough, as well as sometimes corporations have been saying that they're going to give some money to their employees because of their corporate tax cut. So I think it's a positive for Republicans. Donald Trump is still not a popular president. Republicans still have a lot of problems ahead in the midterm, but the alternative of not having done this and seeming to have failed on another agenda item would have been worse.
Well, Jim Kessler, back to you. When we were at these microphones last, you predicted that the bill would not pass. And why did the GOP prove you wrong?
Right. Got me again. I always thought it was going to be very, very close. I knew there would be no Democrats that would support it. Here was the thing that I was looking for that did not happen. There are a series of Republicans, particularly in the Senate, who feel that Donald Trump's presidency is dangerous. They feel he is not fit to be president of the United States. They're wondering if, you know, how sane he is, whether he's an authoritarian. They're worried about him. I thought that in the end, some of those Senate Republicans would vote down his tax bill because they wanted to not give him oxygen to move forward. That did not happen. They basically went along with the Trump agenda there and basically rescued his presidency. So that's what I thought that we would see with a couple of these senators. I thought with John McCain, with a few others, Bob Corker, who did vote no, Republican, who did vote no on the bill. Did Corker eventually vote yes on that?
I believe he did.
Okay,
yes.
He voted no on the original bill.
Yes, but he did vote yes for the final tax bill.
That's right. And that didn't happen. So that was where that prediction was coming from.
We're going to get into the politics in a little bit, but first, back to you, John, to talk about what needs to get done. You know, by January 19th, a budget has to be passed. Can the Congress get this accomplished without facing a government shutdown?
Well, this is a regular problem we've had, and it's not just a divided government. Even with Republicans being in charge, you essentially need Democratic support to continue to fund the government. Ideally, we would have funded the whole year. Now we're on kind of a continuing resolution. Typically, we come up to that deadline, and we either And the worst case scenario, we have a short shutdown, which is resolved, or we kick the can down the road. I think the difficulty here is that there are other things that might be brought in and attached to this. And the big one is there is the president and Republicans and Democrats in Congress have been talking about doing something about the Deferred Action Program, essentially allowing people who have come to this country as children illegally to get some sort of status to be here. And make that a more permanent feature rather than just rely on a presidential directive. Democrats, I think, are now saying perhaps that they will not vote for the continuing of the government unless that comes through clean, comes through as something that they could support. And Republicans are saying they want some conditions. Particularly, Donald Trump has weighed back in and said he wants the wall connected to this and some other security measures. So we don't know if those two items will be connected. We may just go ahead and fund the government and deal with that issue later. Democrats are pushing for it to be dealt with now. And we don't know whether that issue will be dealt with by itself with some conditions or what those conditions will be. But those are the two big fights that we are facing in the next couple weeks.
Turning to you, Jim Kessler, for your take on how this is going to play out by January 19th, particularly with respect to the so-called Dreamers, the DACA, and what kind of leverage do you think the Democrats will use?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a Washington game, whether the government is going to be funded and whether it's going to stay open or not, and whether they hit the deadline or whether they miss the deadline by a couple days, it's hard to say. There is movement towards a deal, and there's movement towards a deal that includes these so-called DACA immigrants. And right now, the opposition, it's coming from three places. One is there's opposition on the far right on this. And the Freedom Caucus in the House, which is very conservative Republicans, they just put out their own version of what should be done. It's a non-starter, but it's a signal that they're saying to Donald Trump and to the Speaker Paul Ryan, you know, you better not go too far. And then there's some folks on the left who are also saying, you know, it better be perfect what's going to be done here, and don't put any money towards the wall. And they're voicing some opposition. And then the third place is Donald Trump's position has moved a lot within the same day, even within the same meeting. So it's really hard to pin him down. I'm getting more optimistic that something can be done on DACA that both sides could live with that would also include funding the government. But, you know, I'm not going to go out on a limb and make a bad prediction again, but I'm getting more optimistic.
Okay. Well, let's go back to, you know, the legislative agenda. To what extent anything can be done this year, given that it's a midterm election year? We see so many members of Congress, Republicans, John Fortier, running for the exits, saying that they're not going to, you know, run again. What does that mean? But first, let me ask you, what else you think could be done? President Trump talks about infrastructure. But then some analysts say, well, how can you have a big infrastructure bill when we're running up deficits as a result of the recently passed tax bill? Do you see an infrastructure bill in the offing at all or any other type of legislation?
Well, I think there are two paths for larger legislation. One is, as Republicans have been in charge of all the Congress as well as the presidency, they have used this year successfully with the tax cut and the year before unsuccessfully with the health care bill, a process called reconciliation, which allows them to move things by a simple majority, doesn't require Democratic votes. And there was all sorts of talk that Speaker Ryan, the Speaker of the House, a Republican, was looking to do some major changes in entitlement reform, changes to our pension system, maybe health care. Maybe we would do some welfare reform. That seems to be dying out. Republicans are going to have to agree with their small and smaller majority on something that they might do. And so it is possible that they could get together and pass a budget which would allow them to move something bigger along their agenda line. But it's not clear that they will agree. Your second point is about infrastructure. That, I think, has been the interesting issue all along. Donald Trump ran different than many Republicans in that he was very supportive of infrastructure. Many Republicans are worried about the cost, are not usually on board with that. Democrats might be more favorable to it. The question is, can we get something in practice in this area? You know, I suspect we could get something because you can make it bigger or smaller, but I'm not sure that there's tremendous enthusiasm for Democrats to working with Donald Trump, and there's still parts of the Republican Party who are going to be resistant to the cost of this and not really enthusiastic about this. So it's possible, but it is a longer shot.
How do you see a Jim Kessler getting anything done on one of President Trump's other priorities in addition to tax reform, and that is infrastructure? And what role would the Democrats play? Do they have leverage on this topic?
Democrats do have leverage because on infrastructure in the Senate, you would need 60 votes, and Republicans have 51, and as John was saying, not all Republicans are in unison on this, so you would definitely need Democratic support. The key is what happens on this budget resolution deal that's happening for January 19th, because if there is some sort of agreement on immigration, not complete comprehensive immigration reform, but dealing with these DACA kids, kids who came here undocumented as children, then what will happen is you're going to see other Democrats say, now, wait a second, we were allowed to work for Donald Trump when it was a clear progressive priority. Shouldn't we be able to work with Donald Trump on a priority that's more important, let's say, to the heartland infrastructure being one example? So if they can get a deal on immigration in this budget and then do a few bipartisan things on health care, there's the CHIP program, which is the child insurance program that needs to be renewed. And then there's some fixes to Obamacare that Republican Lamar Alexander and Democrat Patty Murray in the Senate have come up with a compromise. If they can get those things done and through, then I think it opens the door for some bipartisan action going forward afterwards.
But like anything for this administration and others, there's always politics that intervene. And we will talk about that in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard. He's senior vice president for policy at Third Way. And we're discussing the legislative priorities for the U.S. Congress and the midterm elections coming up later this year. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Now here's a shout out to our dear friend and loyal listener, Delson Jonah from Plateau State, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, John Fortier. I'd like to remind our listeners and you as well, remember when Donald Trump said that Mexico would pay for the border wall? Remember? So that's off the table. And so this question of immigration reform, the wall, the DACA, and so on, it becomes rather complicated, as Jim Kessler told us before we went to the break. We'll see what will happen there. As I said, John Fortier, let's talk a little bit about politics. The last time we were at these microphones, the book Fire and Fury had not been published. And we have a big splash now at the beginning of 2018. It's an inside look at the White House and not a very flattering portrait, to say the least, of President Trump. It prompted vociferous denials by Trump's spokesman about Mr. Trump's performance or his role as president and how he conducts himself. The book, written by Michael Wolff, a journalist, seems to have gotten a lot of quotes from Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon was, of course, Mr. Trump's former campaign strategist, who was the head of Breitbart until he wasn't just recently. This is a far-right online publication. What do you see as the political fallout for Mr. Trump and the Trump White House as a result of this book?
Well, it's not a very flattering book. Presidents generally don't like to have tell-all insider books, and this one perhaps is even more lurid. I think there are some things, certainly, that the Trump administration points to that Michael Wolff, the journalist, has, you know, a little bit of a sketchy past in some of his techniques and past reporting, and they're playing on that. And certainly it does emphasize themes that many in the electorate, and especially Democrats, have been emphasizing, people reporting that they were worried about Donald Trump's fitness for the job, sketchiness in terms of, you know, meetings with the Russians, or at least some of his staff. I do think, though, that some of this is ground that we've plowed over before. We're still waiting to, you know, see what happens with the special counsel investigation. I think the biggest fallout for this is the question of Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon came to the president later in the campaign, was the voice for kind of the strongest version of the populism that Donald Trump was putting forward, and was in the White House for quite a while advocating that view as well. He has now fallen off the radar screen. He has been disowned by Donald Trump. Now,
I think Donald Trump still is going to be a populist candidate and echo many of those themes. But he has, I think, shown in some ways that he wants to show that he is stronger than Steve Bannon. He didn't need Steve Bannon. And, you know, there's some truth to the fact that he preceded Steve Bannon in terms of his sort of messages on immigration and other issues. So I do think the biggest fallout from all of this is, you know, Steve Bannon, who was seen as this mysterious and powerful figure, has really fallen quite far. And the president has really walked away from him.
I'd like to get your take, Jim Kessler, about the fallout from the book. Do you agree with John that the biggest loser, you might say, is Steve Bannon? His so-called very populist wing of the party now is not in favor vis-a-vis the GOP establishment. But of course, it does touch on President Trump, the perception by some that he is not fit for the office and that members of his campaign and some in the administration perhaps not only spoke ill of him behind his back, but also engaged in activities which could implicate them in this so-called Russia probe.
There's no good news in this book for Donald Trump. I mean, this book is a disaster. How big of a disaster, we don't know. I agree with John. It's even worse for Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon is kind of like Rasputin. You know, he's the whisperer for Donald Trump. He had a lot to do with Donald Trump getting elected when he was at Breitbart, which is a very right-wing website that people didn't really pay attention to. You know, until very recently, he gave Donald Trump a platform on that website and also on the radio show. And, you know, that made a difference. The thing that you also see in this book is there's warfare within the White House. There's the quote-unquote Steve Bannon wing, this populist right-wing nationalist wing. And then there's still some establishment Republicans there. And this book is really, in some ways, besides about the dysfunction of the Trump White House, it is about that civil war and the knives in the back that people are putting into each other. And look, the Russia probe is going to be a problem for the Trump White House. Does it bring down his presidency? I'm not comfortable saying yet yes or no, but it is a big problem and it is an enormous distraction. And this book points that out.
Indeed. Well, we're going to talk about the Russia probe in just a moment. But first, back to you, John Fortier, to talk about the fallout from the book and just the fact that midterm elections for the party in power are always complicated. So looking toward the midterm elections in November, it seems like the wind is at the back of Democrats as a result of several elections last year, the fact that a Democrat won in the very, very red state of Alabama. But we see so many Republican members of Congress heading for the exits. The chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Ed Royce, among many others. What do the midterm elections portend, in your view, for the balance of power in the House and Senate? And also, we have to acknowledge Mr. Trump's rather low poll numbers and to what extent that plays into the Democrats' favor and to the detriment of the Republicans.
Well, I think there's several factors, and they're basically all pointing in the same direction toward Democratic gains. Typically, any president in office, his party tends to lose seats in the midterm elections. Only three times in the last 160 years has a president's party ever gained seats in a midterm election in the House. So even if you're doing okay, you're likely to lose some seats. If you're doing not so well, if your job approval number is low, as Donald Trump's is, those gains tend to be larger for the other party. So all those things point in that direction. Some of the reason for that is people see the writing on the wall ahead of time. And so now you see some members of Congress leaving because they don't want to face a tough fight. Some Democratic challengers more willing to get into races because they think this is a good year. This year might win. So it has effects even now. Now, look, I think the direction is clearly going to go in the Democratic direction, but it could be affected by how things go in the next 6 months or so. Is the economy doing a little better? Is it going to do even better? Or is it going to do worse? That would move it in one direction or the other. And, you know, the president is at about 40% job approval rating in the averages. That's lower than really any president at this point in recent years. But if the election were held today, I expect the House of Representatives would go to Democrats. And the Senate, the wind will be blowing in their direction, but I think the map is very difficult, so it's a little less certain.
Well, Jim Kessler, I'm sorry to put you on the hot seat again for predictions, but with
bloodbath.
Okay. This is like no holds barred. How do you see the midterms for the Democrats?
Democrats are going to take the House back. If not, I don't know what I'll do on this show after November 2018 if they don't. I don't know if they'll take the Senate. As John was saying, not every senator is up in our system. One-third of the senators are up, and the map is such that more Democrats are up than Republicans just by happenstance. Earlier, we had talked about the tax bill, And here's something that's interesting. Generally, when a tax bill passes, especially one that cuts most people's taxes, like, it is very popular, and the president's approval rating, like, jumps way up. This is the first time I've ever seen anything like this happen, and the tax bill isn't popular. And the president, he moved up a couple points, but he moved up within the margin of error, as they say. Why? He is so unpopular. And there are a lot of folks out there that have given up on him, and they just want something else. So the economy can do better. But hey, the economy's doing really well right now, and the economy has been doing pretty well. And, you know, Congress could get a few things done, some bipartisan bills passed. They don't like the way this guy's acting and how he's comporting himself in office. And every day there's another drama and another scandal and another bizarro tweet. And Republicans are going to be punished for this, not everywhere in the country, but in places where there's swing districts. And one last thing, there's a nominating process here where Democrats have to pick nominees that will run against sitting Republicans or in open seats. There are thousands and thousands of Democrats running in these races. If Democrats pick in these races the right type of person, meaning moderate Democrats in parts of the country where the voters tend to be moderate, and they've been doing that thus far in 2017, if Democrats take a broad path, they are going to sweep to victory in the House and may possibly take the Senate.
A very quick follow-up before I turn back to John for our last question. Should they win the House of Representatives, become the majority, that is the Democrats, that gives them the power to subpoena and to do more investigations with respect to this Russia probe. And do you expect that to happen?
I do. I expect that to happen. And, you know, there'll be calls for impeachment, which, you know, we'll see where we are a year from now, whether those calls are premature or not. You know, Democrats taking one or both houses of Congress, you know, is an overused term in Washington, but it's a game changer.
Back to you, John Fortier. On this so-called Russia investigation, the special counsel Robert Mueller is tasked to look into potential ties between Trump campaign officials and Russia, as well as Russia's very well-documented interference in the 2016 elections. Mr. Mueller now plans to seek an interview with Mr. Trump, who continues to deny any so-called collusion or conspiracy with Russia. He calls this a Democratic witch hunt, but in fact, the investigation is still ongoing and there really is no results yet. Mueller has had bipartisan support, even though recently many Republicans are trying to discredit Mr. Mueller. But two former campaign officials pleaded guilty, a former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, is under indictment. How do you see this playing out?
You know, we don't know what the end is going to be, but it is not good for the president. It's not good for any president to have an independent-type counsel investigating them. And look, there's some things that are already, I think, established, certainly that Russia was playing in the election space, that Paul Manafort, for a while, was Donald Trump's chairman of his campaign, has had very sketchy dealings with the Russians and allies over the years and represented them and is probably in deep trouble legally, that there have been lower-level contacts where there were some hints that maybe Russians would give help to the campaign. The core thing that we just don't know is that there was really strong collusion between the campaign and the Russians, that people gave them emails, that there was direct help. You know, there's some people who point to some hints that say that may be what's coming, and some people say, you know, it's just surface and maybe he'll be exonerated at the end. One other point is that he has potentially some danger for obstruction of justice charges, where he might have, both in pressuring the FBI and to save his national security advisor, Michael Flynn, done some things that the special counsel will give him a hard time about. So we have not seen the strong case for collusion, and maybe it's coming, but that's the thing that I think would be the most damaging to Trump. Strong collusion with him and directly his campaign with Russians in the election. That would be one that would be very hard for them to get out of.
Well, the last word to you, Jim Kessler, because that's why Mr. Mueller wants to interview Mr. Trump. But, of course, Mr. Trump is pushing back, even though many months ago he originally said, sure, I'll speak to the special counsel. And now he's walking that back in light of perhaps this explosive book.
Right. So what Steve Bannon said in the book is that when the special investigator gets to Donald Trump Jr., he'll crack like an egg. And he talked about how it was treasonous and treacherous. So that's not quite a smoking gun, but you're getting close to it.
And, of course, a conversation to be continued. But I'm afraid for now that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier. He's director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, senior vice president for policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, as always, thanks so much for your terrific analysis.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Joe Gill. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.